Starting therapy is simple with BetterHelp. Finding a therapist that you feel comfortable with and can meet in the privacy of your own space is one of the best things about BetterHelp. And if you're not satisfied with the first therapist, you can easily switch to another one. I connected to a therapist that had the understanding and the skills I was looking for and have really benefited from my time with her. If you're struggling and think you'd benefit from a therapy session, go to betterhelp.com/healingtrauma during sign up and get 10% off your first month of therapy.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast. My name is Dr. Mark McNear. I am filling in for my good friend Monique Coven. Today, I am absolutely thrilled to have with me Dr. Frank Anderson. He is a Harvard-trained psychiatrist, psychotherapist, author, world-renowned expert on trauma, and I'm looking forward to our time together, Frank.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's great to be here.
So we're going to be talking about your book, To Be Loved, A Story About Truth, Trauma, and Transformation. It's a memoir. First thing, I just want to say, I went through the reviews on Amazon. Phenomenal. You know, people had said so many great things, and I picked one of them out that I just wanted to read to you before we actually talk about the process of the book and why the book. Someone wrote, "It gave me hope that I too can heal."
That was my main agenda of writing the book, actually. It really was. It wanted to call it Hope and Healing. Like, there was all, they're like, you can't use the word heal. The publisher's like, can't use the word. I'm like, but this is what it's about.
And it's certainly reflected in the book. My first question to you is, why the book at this point in your life? Why the book?
It was really kind of surprising to me. I mean, I'll tell you, I'd never thought of myself as an author. Like, ever. I knew I was smart. I knew I loved teaching, but I didn't think I was a writer. But there's this strong link between putting your teaching onto the page that society and culture seem to want and need around legitimacy. Like, I wrote an article, then I wrote a chapter, then I wrote a workbook, then I wrote a textbook, and now I wrote a memoir. So I've evolved into this writer. It was not until I wrote my memoir and I said, I guess I am a writer. Like, and I do really love the process now of writing. I was kind of surprised, actually. Like, every time I go speak or do a workshop, I'm like, hello, I'm Frank Anderson. I have a trauma history. Nice to meet you. Like, it's kind of what I do. I really want to break down this us and them divide.
Yeah.
It's so prevalent in our field. Like, I'm the trauma expert. You're the trauma survivor. Like, that's baloney. That's just baloney. Like, we all have trauma histories in some degree. I haven't met anybody who hasn't been through an overwhelming life experience. I just haven't. You know, I have a healthy childhood, and then there's all this unpacking of what that actually means. So it was important for me always to teach and talk about my trauma history. Then after I wrote Transcending Trauma, like literally, which was my second book, I wrote that during the pandemic, and literally it was like 2 months later, the publisher's like, hey, we want to meet. I'm like, okay, like, I thought they wanted to meet, like, let's look at the results of the book and see how Transcending Trauma did. And they're like, we want you to write a memoir. I was like, what? Like, what? Like, are you crazy? Me? You know? And it was odd, because that night I had a dream. And it was one of those dreams that I get periodically. It was just came from somewhere else, right? And it just was this repetitive phrase, the moments that made me. And so I was like, and I came and said, I think I have the title of the book. And they're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I had this dream last night, the moments that made me, the moments that made me. And so it kind of, I was like, well, I guess I can do that. I can. And I started writing down a collection of moments, really. I was like, we all have moments. Everybody has moments, right? And I just started writing down this collection of moments. And I was like, there's a story here.
I love that idea that you said moments, because moment after moment after moment, these moments turn into this story,
right.
And this story expands into our life, good, bad, and indifferent.
All of the above.
Yeah.
We all have a collection of these moments, you know, and it was kind of like, the book was so powerful in reviewing my moments. Like, I do writing courses now for people.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Well, you're jumping into my next question. And that is, what was the experience like for you going through all of this regarding healing? I wrote down, you know, with your book, I said it's raw, it's vulnerable, it's courageous, it's sad, it's encouraging, it's transformative, it's disruptive.
Yes.
And so, yeah. So,
thank you.
You are more than welcome. So I want to know, what was it like for you going through that as a psychiatrist, a therapist, and as a patient, if I can say that, you know?
100%. You know, I had no idea what I was getting into. Like that, I could tell you. Sure, I'll write a memoir. That's the kind of person I am. Sure, oh my God. You know, I could do that. You know, it was a very elaborate process, much more intensive than I ever thought it was going to be. And I'll say that, I'll go back to that. And the brilliant thing about it that was so guided is the word I'll use, is that the last third of the book was written in real time. I was writing as my dad was transitioning. I was like, oh my God, my life is here to support the memoir. It was weird. It was like I was writing my memoir as my life was unfolding.
Well, as it was happening.
It was happening. I was like, yeah, go visiting my parents in Chicago, get on the plane, bawl my eyes out, right to heal so much. I thought this was a book for other people, which it is, and I'm so grateful. But I didn't expect to heal. I put so many things together, you know, that what ended up happening, and this is going to sound weird maybe, but I've heard Lady Gaga talk about the process of writing an album and the way she gets into this zone and songs come through her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I've heard her.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to me when I was writing this memoir. I was waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Like, and writing this stuff. Yeah.
And I sleep. It was like, it was all, and I just like, right. I was just on fire. I wasn't tired. And it was just flowing through me. So the stuff that was coming up was like unbelievable. And I was making connections in my life. I was putting pieces together in a way that I've been in therapy 30 some odd years, long time. All the therapy I did didn't connect the dots the way writing did for me. Like, not that therapy wasn't helpful. I'm not saying that.
No.
The writing process reached a different layer of stuff. That was so profound for me. It put the pieces together in a way that was amazing. And the other thing I'll say about it, Mark, was I wrote three versions of this book. The first was Frank Anderson, the psychiatrist, writing a book about his life. You know, my husband was like, it's good, but it's missing. I'm not with you. And I wrote the whole book again from the child's perspective. From Frankie's perspective. I'm in the room. I'm in the closet. I'm running through the house. You know, I'm in therapy as a 6-year-old kid. I wrote the whole book from the me, like, living it perspective. And then the third version was weaving the two narratives together.
Wow.
You know, and so the third version was when should it be Frankie? When should it be Frank? When should it be Frankie? When should it be Frank? So the process of writing was a very powerful one of putting, it was hard, to write the Frankie version. Trauma healing is not about reliving. And I was reliving when I was writing the Frankie version, you know, so that was traumatizing in a way, even though at that point I had done so much work that I had the capacity to kind of move in and out. I didn't just stay stuck in my history.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd be in these books. It's like, am I going to say that? I was like, am I going to say this? And what kept coming up around that was like, truth. This is a story about truth. I want to be kind. I'm not interested in hurting anybody, but I am going to be truthful. So I'd get these pangs of like, people are going to know more about me than I'll ever know about them. I didn't care.
Yeah.
It was just like, look, and this is my life, and you could do whatever you want with it. Like, do whatever you want with it. And nobody, Mark, nobody has been mean to me. or attacked me for me sharing the truth of my life. And I'm so grateful because I wasn't sure how it would be received. You know, I didn't know.
I was going to say to you, what was it like when you released it? Because I know for me, yeah, sent my book out and I was like, what did I just do?
I was driving to New York from Boston for release week. And I had a whole week of press set up. I'm driving in the car. And all of a sudden on my Spotify, This Is Me comes up from Greatest Showman, the song.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I burst into tears and I cried and I cried. And I played it like 20 times all the way through Connecticut. It's like, this is me. Raw, broken, bruised, battered. This is me. This is me. And it was such a moment. Like, I'll never forget the moment of like driving to New York, releasing the book the following day on Tuesday. I was driving on Monday. And that song was like, okay, world, like, it's yours now. Like, here it is. It's yours. Because when you write, you're with something in a very personal way, as you know, for years. And there was the giving it to the world also, which was another fascinating thing, reading it. Like, I read my own version of the audiobook, right?
Yeah, that I listened to it and I was like, wow, this is another layer of exposure for Frank.
I was not expecting that. I was not expecting that. Like, because I knew every word. I went through every single word of the whole thing. So I knew it inside and out, but I had never vocalized the story. So saying it out loud was a whole different level.
It's just so interesting you say that, because I have been in story groups where you just share a little piece, like one of those moments of your story. And it is, I found it to be absolutely transformative, because you're hearing it and you're having it witnessed by other people. And it's just a different layer. I wanted to ask you, when you were talking about Frank and Frankie and kind of going back and forth, writing the different versions, the word that came to my mind was integration.
Well, that's interesting. Connection is what I would say.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me about that then.
Integration feels, when I hear it, like you say it, feels a little bit detached and clinical for me in the experience. Right. And when I think about it, I was like, that's not what it feels like with Frankie, for example, all the different aspects of what he went through. It's more about love and connection. Like, we have a relationship. We have a relationship. It's love and connection between him and I in a way that was very healing and necessary for me. The reason I say that is this. There was an estrangement group yesterday. I was estranged from my parents for 7 years as a result of my trauma and trying to name what happened to me. And there were three times in my life that I really chose me over my parents. One was when I said, I set a boundary and I can't talk to you. You know, you guys are attacking me. You're not believing me. I need to set a boundary. Second was when I came out. Like, I grew up in a very conservative Midwestern town family. It's like, there is no way they're going to accept who I am. Right. Yeah. So that was the second time. And then the third time was publishing this book. I was like, I may lose my mother. I may lose my cousins. I may lose every member of my family. And some of them I might. I haven't seen. But it was like, I care about me, little Frankie, more than I care about my mother or my cousins. And that was huge. That was such a, it's like, you're a selfish son of a bitch versus, you really are finally honoring yourself. And that little boy who has spent his whole year wanting to be loved, I think it's your job to love him. And so that was very therapeutic for me, to choose me, to choose him, because I always deferred to my mother because I needed her for survival. There were these moments that I'm choosing. So it's more like a love connection.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that.
Like, it really is. It's emotional. I have to honor him in a way that he wasn't honored for most of his life.
Thank you for that. So there's a quote in your book that I wrote down, and I'm going to read it to you. And then I just want you to talk about it. We are all driven to make up for what we missed in childhood.
Yeah. That's a bummer, but it's true. Damn. And people don't know that. Mostly it's unconscious, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what the title of this book is about, to be loved. And I learned that to writing this memoir. Like, I was like, when I started reviewing my moments, I was like, excuse me, every decision in my life has been around being loved by my father. And I was like, why do I care about this guy who was so brutal to me? Like, why do I want to be loved by him? Like, it was kind of baffling, honestly. You know, like, why did I give a shit? But it ended up being true. Like, all of my decisions, getting into Harvard, you know, every relationship I chose, well, having kids, decision was really rooted in this wound, this trauma of not feeling loved. You know, like, I felt loved by my mother for sure. It was always conditional relative to my father. But I didn't know what love felt like. Like, I had that experience. It wasn't like I was one of these kids who never had an experience of love, because I did.
Right.
But it was interesting. Still a little baffling to me, Mark. Why does my whole life revolve around being loved by him? You know, and I was grateful and fortunate to have the experience of being loved and loving him. So I achieved that desire at the end of his life, which was such a huge gift for me. I felt it for and from. But yeah, what I think our wounds, this is why my purpose in life is bringing trauma healing to the world, because I think for all of us, we're driven by this desire for love and connection. Our life has all these wounding experiences that block that. I think that's why we choose the partners we choose. Like, because first relationship I was in was with a woman. I became my father. She became my mother. It was like I was controlling. I was verbally abusive at times. She was passive and accommodating like my mother. Then I came out and sure as hell enough, I became my mother. And I connected to a guy who was just like my father, abusive and controlling, and I was passive. Instantly, this desire to for redemption. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
This unconscious need for redemption is actually what attraction is. Attraction is our desire for redemption. Yeah. And we keep trying until we get it right, or we heal.
I was going to say,
I say this, I was running out of options. I chose women, didn't work. I chose men, that didn't work. Like, I was like, damn, I'm running out of options to rinse and repeat, as I like to say.
Yeah. And I think it's that idea, Frank, that you get to the point where you say to yourself, all of these things are happening around me. It's like, no, they're happening inside of me. I'm creating this picture and then I'm sitting going like, what happened?
Why do I keep doing this?
Yeah.
Why do I keep doing this? You know, and it honestly, it hasn't been until recently, let's say the past 3 years, that I feel confident. I really feel not inflated, but also not insecure.
I was just going to say that sounds to me like there's a feeling of security.
It's truth. This is what I'm good at. This is who I am. And it's not inflated. But it also, most of my life, you know, people be like, I could not introduce myself. I went to Harvard. Like, don't say that. And people be like, well, I'll say it, Frank, because people want to hear it. Like, okay, you say it. But I couldn't acknowledge that accomplishment. It was too much.
Those two things don't go together.
Yes, that's exactly right. So I couldn't, even though I was like, read my bio. It's ridiculous. Like, it's so overachieving. Like, I was constantly striving. And then when I hear people read my bio, I'd be like, who the hell is that? You know,
maybe a little compensation there.
It was crazy.
I get it.
That's to be loved. My whole life was striving. I couldn't even take in or accept what was actually good, authentically, accurately good about myself. It's, but really, in the last 3 years, it's more realistic. This is what I'm good at.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm not.
Like, this is the reality.
This is reality.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to be able to really accept reality, which is different than slipping into little Frankie's view. I'm a worthless piece of shit. Or overcompensating. I'm the world's greatest psychiatrist in the world. It's like those two extremes.
Yeah.
And it's like neither are true. Here I am. You know, this is me, you know, in that kind of way.
So you are looked at as being a trauma expert, and I would agree that you are. Just going to hold that for a minute. I know we just got done talking about how hard it is.
It's easier to do that now.
I'd love to ask people, especially people who are in the field like you are, What has trauma taught you?
What has my trauma taught me or the field taught me? What are you asking?
Either or.
Well, I'll start with field. You know, mm-hmm. I've been in this field for a long time, since 1992. So I really have a breadth and depth of experience. Part of the benefit of being in Harvard at the time during my residency was that I connected with Bessel van.
Have you ever had those days where everything just feels harder than usual? And you can't quite figure out why. Recently, I've learned that sometimes it's not just stress or lack of sleep. It could be my hormones at play. That's where Happy Mammoth comes in. They offer a free 2-minute quiz that can help you uncover the root cause of your hormonal symptoms. It's super easy. Just answer a few questions about what you're going through and where you're at in life. And the best part, after taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help balance your hormones and start feeling better. Taking care of your hormones isn't just about feeling good right now. It's about investing in your long-term health. By taking the hormone quiz, you'll learn more about your hormone balance and can make small, intentional changes to support your body, whether it's with Hormone Harmony or another Happy Mammoth product. The quiz helps guide you towards solutions that work specifically for you. One of the best things about Hormone Harmony is how it's become such an essential part of so many women's daily routines. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. In fact, a survey found that 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw improved mood, and 100% said they felt like themselves again. Ready to start feeling like yourself again? Head over to happymammoth.com and take their free 2-minute hormone quiz today to find the ultimate answer to your stubborn hormonal issues. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order with my code HEALING at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HEALING for 15% off today.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I became the psychiatrist for Bessel's Trauma Clinic for years. I am friends with all the pillars of the field because I was there. I said to Stephen Porges the other day, I was there the first time Stephen Porges ever presented anything at a trauma conference. Bessel had him at the trauma conference. I met Stephen Porges. I was there when Dan Siegel was introduced to the field of trauma. I was there when Janina Fisher, Gabor Mate, all of these people that are the pillars, I grew up with them. You know what I mean? And I've seen the field evolve. You know, I was one of the first people to be trained in EMDR. Bessel connected with Francine Shapiro. We were the first group, and we did a research study on EMDR versus Prozac. So I've had this insider's view of the evolution of our field, which I feel so privileged to have had. I remember when I was in my residency, people would fall apart like crazy. They'd get hospitalized and they'd decompensate and fall apart because we were all about fragmentation. CBT didn't even have EMDR at the time. People would fall apart like crazy. Lawyers, doctors, like women that were like highly accomplished would get into the hospital and totally fall apart. So our field has evolved around all these new modalities, EMDR, sensory motor, somatic experiencing, IFS, AEDP. We have a bunch of different ways to address thoughts, feelings, and physical sensations around trauma in a way that we didn't before. So there was this decades of model makers and decades of neuroscience integration. That's the way I think of it. There are all these model makers and neuroscience integration. For me, Mark, the next wave is integration. It's like, okay, thank you, model makers.
Yeah.
Thank you, neuroscience integration. It's time to put this stuff together. And that's one of the reasons I'm opening an open trauma institute is to start integration. I feel like that.
I love that. Yeah, I love
part
that.
Of my job here, yeah. Part of my contribution, separate from bringing trauma healing outside of psychotherapy into the general public, is I'm very passionate about that, is the next wave of integration of trauma treatment. Because each model is brilliant. And each model has a very important contribution, but none of the models are comprehensive, in my view. They all offer hugely significant pieces. And, you know, again, I've known Bessel forever. Bessel's always been an integrated person.
Integrative, right? Yeah.
I've had conversations with Dick Schwartz, the founder of IFS, and Bessel. And Dick is like, IFS is the way. Bessel's like, no, it isn't. It's one of the ways.
Yeah.
You're good friends. Like, they're good friends.
Absolutely.
Bessel's always been an integrated person. I believe in that. I really do. So there's something, that's what I think the field has taught me. And the next wave is, for me, is integration. Personally, I wouldn't be who I am without my trauma history. There's just no way. Like, I'm grateful that I chose this family to grow up in. My father and I, you know, I dedicated the book to my dad and my sons because they have taught me the most about life and about trauma. I would not be this trauma expert if it wasn't for my father. I really wouldn't. So I learned so much about life, about love and connection through my trauma.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm not angry. I'm grateful. I wouldn't be on this podcast. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be doing any half of this stuff that I do without, in the world without my history.
Yeah, without those experiences.
I know it from the inside out.
I do.
That's been helpful for me as a leader and healer and like changer in the world. I can speak about trauma from both the intellectual cognitive side, but also from the personal experience side. That's integration.
Okay. See, we got there.
That's integration. Like, really, that feels integrated. And it is.
I'm going to ask you, how does shame from childhood show up in adult relationships? And I think you alluded to it a little bit more, but could you speak a little bit more on that?
Yeah, like for me, shame is the relational trauma wound. If you have relational trauma or complex PTSD, it's rooted in shame. And the reason it's rooted in shame, from my perspective, is that people who relationally violate don't take responsibility for their action. So children are left filling in the blanks. Gabor and I have talked about this 100% of the time. Kind of say that as never want to use absolutes, but 100% of the time, the kid says, it's me, it's my fault, I'm bad and I'm wrong. So when perpetrators don't take responsibility for their actions, the victims do.
There's no other choice.
Victims do this all the time. Culture and society does it, blaming the victim. You know, so when perpetrators don't take responsibility, the victim does. And so that's the origins of shame. It's not something bad happened to me. It's I am bad and wrong for what happened to me. So we personalize our experience when perpetrators don't take responsibility. And I'm not talking about the alcoholic who says, oh my God, I'm such a bad person. I'm so sorry. It'll never happen again. That's this false accountability.
Right.
And then
right.
The next day it happens again, and the next day. That's not accountability. That's not truly taking responsibility for their actions. And it's one of the things that I've benefited from in my healing journey is it's so freeing to be wrong and to take responsibility and say, yes. It's my fault. I screwed up. I'm so sorry. I do this with my kids all the time. And it's so disarming because they don't have to feel bad about what I did when I'm in a reactive moment. And I'm yelling at them, that's about me, not about them. And taking responsibility for that allows them to not feel shame.
Yeah, I think that's so healing. I love that you say that. I think that for me, with my daughter, Emily, I think one of the most healing moments was for me to get out of rehab and to sit and to talk to her and say, that's on me. That's not on you. Could you imagine if our parents were able to embrace and say that to us? How impactful that would have been.
It's one of the most important things from my perspective in the transition, separate from a moment. When parents lose it, it's their job to take responsibility for losing it. It's not the kid's fault, in my view. Second thing is, in this parent-child transition to parent-adult child, in order for that to be successful, parents need to take responsibility for the ways their kids feel parents failed them. And if that doesn't happen, you're not going to have a successful transition. So this issue of taking responsibility is a big one. And perpetrators have a hard time doing it, but then so do victims.
That's such a great point. Such a great point, Frank. So,
and one of the things, you know, I don't know that you know this. I have a production company now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Informed Media. And To Be Loved is being adapted to the film. So To Be Loved will be a movie, which I'm so thrilled about. One of the most important things as we're talking to the directors and the producers is the importance of the movie. One of the big messages is everyone can heal. The second message is we're all victims and perpetrators. Because if we don't acknowledge our internal victimization and perpetration, I don't think the world's going to heal. I think we other our shadow instead of taking responsibility for it. I think that's what the political divide is. I think that's what religious divide is. I think all the divide is related to othering our shadow instead of taking responsibility for both the ways we've harmed and the ways we've been harmed.
Absolutely. So one last question. I think you've alluded to it, but Frank, what gets you up in the morning now?
Warm weather in LA. This is what, well, you know, talk about integration. Like I am a production company out there. I'm living a bi-coastal life right now. Mm-hmm. I do love being in the energy and the creativity that is out in Hollywood. There is this expansiveness, like storytelling creates the narrative of our culture and society. It really has a profound impact. So trauma-informed media, I want to create trauma-informed narratives, not traumatizing stories. So I'm really excited about the impact storytelling can have on the world. Now, I've been doing individual therapy since 92. I'm wanting to heal on a global scale now. And so LA is a place for me right now that allows me to tap into that level of creativity. So I'm super passionate about creating stories that are trauma-informed and healing for people. There's an awareness of trauma, but people don't understand how it relates to themselves personal.
Yeah. Help us to understand, just if we could back up for a moment. You know, you talked about traumatizing stories.
Yeah.
And then you talked about stories that heal. Could you help us to understand that?
So some of the things that my company, Trauma Informed Media, is doing is we want to meet with the corporate executives in Hollywood, the Netflix, all these people that are making movies, because the culture is traumatizing. We know from the Me Too movement. We know from the dismantling of Harvey Weinstein. Hollywood is a traumatizing environment, and the power differential has been ridiculous. There's a dismantling that's happening beyond Frank Anderson of dismantling that, you know, the strikes and all this stuff. So when traumatized people create traumatized content, it's traumatizing.
Traumatizing.
So many actors I've met are traumatized by playing traumatic roles. So I want to also provide, just like there's an intimacy coordinator on set, I want every movie set to have a trauma-informed person on set so that the staff and directors, the storytellers, the actors are not traumatized by playing trauma roles, and they're done in a non-traumatizing fashion. It's to trickle down. If you're healed telling a trauma story, you're going to tell a different kind of story. Like, it was one of the things in my book, the editors, like I said, I'm going to tell the truth in a kind, loving way. It wasn't about a victim. I didn't want to get back at anybody. I didn't want to hurt anybody. Like, this was like a trauma story from a healed perspective. And some of the editors would even write things like, son of a bitch. Like, I'm like, nope, not calling my dad a son of a bitch. Sorry.
Right.
Like,
right.
That's not the way you tell a trauma story in your traumatized parts. So I really want to change the culture so that we can tell trauma stories from a healed perspective that are profound and impactful, not re-traumatizing.
That makes so much sense. I'm thinking about a clinician that I talked with, Sam Jolman, and he was talking about we can't change the facts of our story, but we can change how we approach it. And if people move into our story with compassion and care and love, it changes how we hold that story.
100%. It's your relationship to it that matters.
So last words, I'm just going to hand it to you. There's so many people out there that are hurting that I talk with that before they begin the journey, they don't have hope that they can change, that their story can be redeemed. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, healing is possible for everybody. I really believe it. You know, I'm a walking example of that. I think trauma is not who we are. It's what happens to us. There's a way to release the energy that doesn't belong to you. I firmly believe that. And that is going to be my next book, the non-author who's got a fourth book in the works, showing the general public how to heal from trauma, because not everybody has the resources of psychotherapy. So
exactly.
I want people to know and stay tuned. The program I'm creating is to help people heal, take back your power and heal your trauma. I do believe everybody's capable of it.
Thank you for those words. And thank you for this time, Frank. It has been wonderful. Let's do it again. Okay.
I'm in. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Frank.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.